Hi, I'm Paige, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm thrilled to be here, and I want to congratulate my sponsees, Yvonne and Kevin, and I want to welcome the out-of-towners, Sebastian, Debbie, and all the rest of you that are from all over, well, out-of-towners. I mean, what's an out-of-towner with Zoom, right? We're all out-of-towners, and to quote My Big Fat Greek Wedding, there's a section where the father of the household makes a speech, and he says, he refers to the last name of the groom's family and the bride's family, the Greek name. And the root of the name in one case is oranges, and in the other case is apples. And so we might be in some cases, in terms of our histories, our stories, our personalities, like apples and oranges, we're all fruit. So we, you know, we are, all alcoholics from all over the world. And so for that reason, we have many things in common. And when I was a newcomer 30 years ago on April 19th, 1991, I was told to look for the similarities, not the differences. And don't compare, because compare is to despair. So rather than compare my stories, just look where I can relate to the similarities of the feelings. The reason I'm speaking a little bit slower is some of the people here, English is not their first language, and I want to be considerate of those people who I am amazed they not only have some of them gotten sober during a pandemic on Zoom, never having gone to a physical meeting, but they're doing it in English-speaking meetings when English is not their first language. How amazing is that? So it's important to keep a perspective, right? Before I go on, Bridget, I want to thank you so much for asking me to speak. It's an honor and a privilege to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am, if you can't already tell, an AA cheerleader. So I have not lost my enthusiasm for AA my entire 30 years of sobriety. I think that is an amazing blessing on my that I was given somehow. It's amazing to have that feeling still after all these years. In fact, it's probably my longest, faithful, long-term, committed relationship, you know. So before I go on, Bridget, remind me, you text me that I can speak for, I don't know, it was like really casual, like 20 to 40 minutes. That's a nice spread. Is that right?
You can speak for as long as you like about anything you like. Yeah.
It's very good that we're not doing cocaine, because if we were doing cocaine, you'll all have to be here for 3-4 days, you know?
You can speak about anything, any issue, anything is open.
Wonderful. What a cool meeting. You know, it's so amazing with Zoom, we can go all over the world and you notice different places are cooler, easier going. You know, some places it's fine. They're under palm trees, no shirt, smoking cigars. And other places it's like you put on your shirt, you don't smoke, you don't eat. You know, and it's so funny because it's so many different personalities, right? And I'm so in love with Zoom. And I'll tell you a little bit, just so you know, I qualify that I'm not coming here just for the mute, unmute jokes and stuff like that. I'm born in Toronto, Canada, daughter of two Holocaust survivors. And I'm first generation Canadian. All the rest of my family was born in overseas. France and Poland and Israel and Germany. And so we were like United Nations at the dinner table, many languages spoken. And I was the only one born in North America. And I, that's just a story. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make me alcoholic or not alcoholic. It's nothing to do with anything. It's just a little piece of information for which some people happen to have a similar story, and it helps identify that for example, that Jewish people can be alcoholic, unlike what I was told growing up. You know, they said Jewish people cannot be alcoholic. Well, that's just not true. Anyway, I started drinking at the Seders. This is a Jewish holiday. And this Manischewitz wine is a Jewish wine, and not a very good wine. But anyway, you know, I liked the feeling that it produced. And ultimately, alcohol gave me the wings to fly, and then it took away the sky. And this is what it says. If you wonder where I got that poetry, I didn't make it up. Raise your hand if you know where I got that poetry. Oh boy. It's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks. It's a great book to read. In fact, if you read it over and over, you will find that there's new information placed in it when you're not looking. Evidently, little elves in the middle of the night go in the book and they put a bunch of new stuff in there, because every time I look at it, it's something new. Like, when did that get in there? Anyway, the other piece of poetry is, we are like men who have lost our legs, we'll never grow new ones. And why is this important? Because I will never become a normal drinker, you know. I will always have this. And they say it's a progressive disease. So I believe that my disease is doing push-ups while I'm doing my recovery. And that means that if I were to drink again 30 years later, it's very likely I'll be where I left off, you know? Where I would have left off. I will be where I would have been had I kept drinking. In other words, it'll be terrible, right? Really bad. And probably the tricky thing about it, because it's cunning, baffling, powerful, and tricky, and patient, this disease, this dis-ease broken down is uncomfortability, right? So this dis-ease will, because it gets progressively worse, and because it's tricky and patient, cunning, baffling, and powerful, there's a very good chance that the first time, if I was to drink again, it will be fine the first night. And I'll say to myself, oh, I only have two, it's fine. Maybe it was a phase I went through. I wasted a lot of time in AA, you know? Or maybe, and then it'll trick me so that I can maybe drink okay for a little while. Maybe it could even take me months of drinking okay. And then one day it will take a turn, right? And the way I know this is from listening to other soldiers in AA who went to the front lines and they tried to fight the war by going and drinking and using again. And I trust them that their experience would be my experience. So when they say, but for the grace of God, there go I, I believe that to be true. I believe I'm just like you and you're just like me. And I've done international surveys because when I got sober, I realized, you know, I can't do my old tricks of going to a bar, putting on a British accent, saying I'm in a rock band, just touring, give me a call, here's my number, I'm only in town for a short while, you know. And then the guy would call the next morning, I'd say, hello. And he'd go, oh yeah, where's the British guy? You know, oh, hold on, hello, you know. And I'd bullshit that I'd been, oh yeah, we've traveled through, you know, we've gone to Germany, London, Paris, you know, and I hadn't been to any of those places. And, but when I got sober, after I finished trying to convince the people that would endure me in the AA meetings and listen to me explain how busy I am and why I can't get to AA, because I was going to be working on this movie. I was sure it was going to come through because I'd been working as an assistant director, a very good job for those that are drinking. Everybody drinks and gets loaded on films, or back then they did in the 80s. And I was sure this other movie was going to come through. It didn't come through. So I'd had plenty of time to go to AA meetings in point of fact. And I did go because the people were very patient and kind. And they would smile when I said something stupid. And they would say, keep coming back. And I was thinking, gee, they're so nice. I guess, you know, I can go back tomorrow. And they really, I got sober, you know, I mean, look, in April 13th, 1991, I got sober because the day before I had a party at a house that I had to leave the next day. And this guy that I was friends with that was house sitting with me, he took a video and he said, "Do you want to see it?" And I said, "Why didn't you take a video of me during the party? Why just the other people of the party?" He said, "No, no, no, you're in the video." I said, "I would remember if you videoed me." He said, "No, you're in the video." So I went in the house and we watched the video and I was drunk and I don't remember anything. I was talking, barely talking. I had put a sarong from Mexico that I had over a black evening outfit. It looked horrible. I had short hair and very puffy cheeks from the alcohol bloat. I was trying to put my arm around a guy and say, "This is my best friend in the whole world." You know, one of those, everybody's your best friend when you're drunk. And I was in a blackout and I recognized that was a blackout. It may not have been the worst thing that ever happened to me. I mean, I'd been to hospital and things when I thought I took too much of this and that combination and I thought I was gonna pass out or whatever. But I mean, that was just it. That just was the last time. The next day I went to Marilyn Hassett's house. She's the actress who was nominated for Academy Award for The Other Side of the Mountain, the movie, that tearjerker movie about Jill Kilmont, the Olympic skier who gets paralyzed and falls in love with a school teacher whilst being in a wheelchair. That was that movie you really need a big box of Kleenex for. Everybody cried through that movie. I don't know who's old enough to remember that one. Anyway, she had gotten lots of people sober by telling them to go to AA. And I was in her house sleeping in her attic in Laurel Canyon. And we were literally like topless sunbathing on the deck overlooking the canyon and the trees and, you know, talking. And she told me, "Why don't you go to AA?" And she gave me a big book that was on her shelf, a nice early edition. She blew the dust. It was pretty dusty up there in Laurel Canyon. She blew the dust off that big book. She handed it to me. She said, "You could call AA Central," which I did. And then I rolled in my little postal Jeep, which was convertible because I cut off the roof and threw it away, which meant the doors went through too. And you know, that's what I was doing for some extra cash in the United States, going to the post office, lining up and buying these postal Jeeps that were right-hand drive. And then I'd put these fancy spoke wheels on them and roll bars and they looked really fucking cool. Everybody thought I was driving an expensive foreign car, you know. And so I rolled down the hill in those with my shitty brakes, you know, and my handbrake just in case. And I rolled down the hill of Laurel Canyon to Fountain and Fairfax. And I went to and my first AA meeting there. But a month after that, I went back to Canada. And because of that 9 months then back home in Canada, I think in Toronto, I think it was very helpful to help me maintain my sobriety because they treated it like what they call, what some of you have heard of, the Pacific Group in Los Angeles. It was like that, all the meetings there, because they made sure we went to fellowship in between. They never let me go, that we went to eat in between, and the waitresses looked depressed as we all filtered in because they were evidently very bad tippers. And we filled up the restaurant and we ate and then go home, nap, and time to go to the nighttime meeting. And everybody kept hucking me about, like, "Do you have a commitment? You know, do you have a sponsor?" And I said, "Why do you keep asking me the same questions?" And they said, "Because you haven't said you have it yet." So I thought, oh, in order for them to stop asking me these damn questions over and over, I have to actually get a sponsor. I actually have to get commitments. I have to go to, you know, they told me to split up the commitments twice to three times a week, so I can't drink in between, which I thought was absurd, frankly. It made no sense. But I found out when I did it, it actually made a ton of sense, because if you had a bad day or two in between the commitments, you always thought, well, gosh, I got to show up tomorrow. I can't let this get any worse, you know? I'm not going to go downhill with this. I got to stick to my commitment. And that really helped me. And it also helped people to get to know me, which meant that I had relationships in AA. And I was told to call several people a day and make friends in AA, one with less time, one with more time, one with same time. I was told to write down the writing exercises for each step, highlight in the 12 and 12 what I identify with, what I don't understand, what I want to discuss on each step. And I had writing exercises for each step. And I would get together with my sponsor once a week and read the things that I highlighted in the book, the 12 and 12. And then I will read the writing exercise that came along with each of those steps. And I could spend an hour, which I won't do, telling you how I worked each step. But I'll tell you, they told me that the program is like a stool, three-legged stool, and you need the unity, which is this fellowship that we have in between the before meeting, the after meeting. That's why even on Zoom, it's good to come early and maybe leave late, or one or the other at least, so that you talk to people in between the meetings like we used to do in coffee shops, or we will do again, I imagine, or we are doing actually. For some of us, depending where you are in the world and if you're vaccinated and so on, and how comfortable you feel with this transition, which I'll talk a little bit about for me, because I'm kind of having a vaccinated, elated moment, if you know what I'm saying, and I'm out and I'm like really like doing a lot all of a sudden in the world. And where was I? Lost my train of thought. Was anybody paying attention? Where was I? Nobody knows. All right. Well, we'll just go with, let me just tell you when I was 2 years sober, something that happened. I think I wouldn't want to talk about today. Oh, I know what it was. Sorry. It was the three-legged stool we were talking about. Unity, recovery, and service. So unity is the fellowship. Recovery is what you do in between the meetings. It's called working the steps. It involves reading the big book, reading the 12 and 12, getting writing exercises from your sponsor, and then reading them to him or her. And also, not just as a routine that you're setting up with your sponsor, but also to intuitively know how to handle situations with you, which used to baffle us, means that we know which step applies when certain things come up. So if I'm feeling extremely agitated and I feel resentments are burning, then I know that it's time for a 10th step, which is a mini fourth step, which is where I write down my resentments. I look at the cause and effect they have on me. And, that are categorized in the big book, in the section where it shows a diagram about the fourth step. And it talks about the effects, and you can write them down on a piece of paper when you write your fourth. And it talks about self-worth, self-esteem, sexual relations, pocketbook, meaning money, future ambition, which means your future goals and dreams. And it brackets fear, the word fear, because underlying all of this is our fear, are our fears. We make fears lists. We write how these various resentments affect us. And then we look at what my part is. That's always where I really need my sponsor. I'm not so good at seeing my part, you know. A lot of times it's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, which is the definition of insanity. You know, expecting someone, you know, expecting a zebra not to have stripes, you know, going to the hardware store for milk, you know, those kinds of things are my part. And recognizing, you know, what is the payoff, you know, for doing that behavior on my part, you know, because, if I'm complaining about who I'm with or what they're like, you know, well, nobody chained me to the situation. You know, I showed up for it. So what's the real story here? What is it about me that I still have to learn, right? Because they say you spot it, you got it. One finger points, 3 point back. So if we're looking at others and complaining, what is it about that behavior that we have going on, right? So what's beautiful about this program is that we get to look in the mirror and we get to see who's home. And I found that this pandemic really shone a light. It really shone a light on who we are, where we're at, and where we want to go. And for many of us, it's been a very difficult time. For many of us, people have lost sobriety. Some have come and gotten sobriety, unbelievably. To me, that's just wild. I am so honored to sponsor the people that I do that I met on Zoom. I think it's crazy, crazy exciting. Anyway, I went from during the pandemic. Well, I'll tell you what happened when I was two. Then I'm going to jump a little bit about the 30 years, and then I'm going to jump to pandemic and then close, if that's okay. So when I was 2 years sober, I was working on a movie back in Toronto, even though I had come back and forth from LA to Toronto, had places in both places in LA and Toronto. I came back to Toronto. Oops. Sorry, a call came in. Okay. And so when I came back to Toronto to work on this movie, a series of events happened where I got fired off the picture because the producer was jealous about a guy. She liked a guy that was a friend of mine, and she just didn't want me around anymore once they solidified their relationship. Even though he was only a platonic friend, she just didn't like our joking, flirting, whatever. And so she got rid of me, and she got rid of the girl that was housing me that I had hired on to do the music for the film. And all these AA people that I got jobs on the film were still going to work besides the music girl who had housed me and besides me. And so a former boyfriend who had been unfaithful, who I had left and said, I'll be back in a week, but never came back and lived in Mexico instead, which I found on a map blindfolded when I let the pages flip through in a travel agency, and I put my finger on a page and I end up on a map of Zihuatanejo, and I went there the next day for a week, but I stayed for half a year, met a new guy, fell in love, you know, had a great time. And I've been going back to that spot every year for 30 years, by the way. And it's great. I'm so glad that happened because it's really changed my life. And I go to AA there now on Zoom because I was going in person, but now I can visit in Zoom. And so the, let's see what time is it. When I came back, he was crying in the street. He found me and he wanted to get married and so on. He was apologetic for what he had done, but it was years later, 7 years later, I was sober, newly, you know, a couple years sober, and which is still a newcomer in my book. And I was in Toronto working on the movie when this happened, and I ran into him in the street and I told him what happened. And he said he never fell out of love with me. He hasn't been with anyone in all these years, and I can stay with him. So I'm staying with him. Well, I went to make amends after that, and I went too far, and I ended up living with him again. And so living with him in Toronto and watching the people across the street in the production office, he lived across the street from it, going to work, all the people from AA, and I was fired. So he was a real estate guy, and he owned a real estate company, and he had guns because he liked to go to the shooting range on Wednesday nights. And so I was suicidal watching the people go to work without me having a working on the movie anymore. So I took one of the guns and I put it to my head, and I didn't know if it was loaded or not. And I'd been fantasizing for days and romanticizing the pleasure of the barrel of a gun resting ever so gently against my temple. I say it like that because it was like a sexy notion to me, to have a gun resting ever so gently on the skin next to my temple. You know, that's how I was looking at it. Kind of the same way I romanticized, you know, cocaine all night and drinking and taking pills of different colors that I wasn't sure what they were. And then the Quaaludes to come down and, you know, all that in the speakeasies that were really factories that really didn't look as good when the lights were on, if you know what I'm saying. And, I didn't know if it was loaded or not. I pulled the trigger ever so gently because I have no experience with guns, so I have no idea how much leverage it takes for the finger to pull the trigger, actually. So I just tried a little, and everything went in slow motion. I could see Joel's face staring at me, his mouth, his jaw dropping. Everything just was like slow motion. And I pulled just a little bit more. And then all of a sudden, I just stopped. I put the gun down. I turned around. I don't remember hearing anything. I walked down a very narrow hall. The walls were moving. I'm sure it wasn't that they were moving, but my tears welling in my eyes made everything look blurry and like they were moving. I got into my loaned car that my father had loaned me while I was in Toronto. You know, my father, who I'm sure I had let down, if you know what I mean, even though I hid so much from him, he was let down. My absence let my family down. And I drove to an AA meeting where there was an Irish woman who used to say, AA is giving me a brainwashing. I tell her my brain's so dirty it needs a good washing. And she saw me come into the meeting, look around, tears coming down, turn right around and go out to the parking lot. And thank God for those days when we followed people out of AA meetings. We looked at the door. In the old days, we looked at the door. We looked at everybody coming in. And if they turned around and walked out, or if during the meeting anybody walked out, people followed them. 2, 3, 4 people followed them outside to see where they were going. Remember those days? The days where we let people sleep on our couches? I remember I had a couch specially made so that if I met any newcomers, they could sleep on it in my living room. When I got a place on King's Road with my... Wait, is he here? He just got off the meeting. Where'd you go? I was going to refer to you. Okay. The guy I was living with back then was just on here. He left. I guess he got bored viewing me. That was 30 years ago. Anyway, all right. So he has a low attention span, hence the relationship being over. So what happened was she took me to her, she got me back in the meeting. And I was the last person to share. She nudged me at the end. She said, you got to go. You got to share. What am I going to share? I said, okay, hi, I'm Paige. I'm alcoholic. Well, before the meeting, I had a gun to my head. And, well, I didn't pull the trigger. And now I'm here. And, you know, you see the guy over next to a couple people down going, hey, pass me a cookie. You know, and he's eating while you're talking about killing yourself, you know. And then they all go, yay. You know, you just tell them you want to kill yourself and everybody's like, yay, well, good. You're in the right place. You're in the right place, you know, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? You are no longer alone. So if that's part of your story, you fit right in. And I see I'm getting some yawners. So I'm going to wrap it up by saying that in the 30 years, I managed to build a career in the film industry. It took me around the world in the business end. I got to go to meetings everywhere. I got to make friends everywhere. Now I have friends everywhere. I was able to amass a bit of money, and that really changed my lifestyle. I had a couple marriages, a couple divorces. I didn't drink. You know, I think people come to your life for a reason or a season or a lifetime. I would have liked to have one man for a lifetime. It just didn't work that way. But, you know, it might be just an idea that sounds great. It might, you know, we're living a lot longer. So where I used to think we only do one career forever because that's how I was taught, or you have one marriage forever, maybe it's not like that. Just, you know, I'm really super happy on my own. I'll tell you the truth. I rented this house in the desert to celebrate my 30 years sober and my vaccination. I've been going out every night, eating, dancing. Last night I was dancing in the street. It was 90 degrees Fahrenheit outside here. You know, I was in a little dress dancing in the street with strangers. And, you know, I love to talk to strangers. It's my thing. And the pandemic was very hard for me because there was no meeting strangers. You couldn't rely on serendipity to enjoy your day. You know, a lot of time people talk about having goals. It's a little tough because it's kind of counterintuitive now because, you taught me so much about living in the moment. You know, you taught me like we make plans and God laughs. I'm not saying it's not a good idea to make plans, but I've been slightly discouraged from that because of all the times I did it, my plan didn't work. So I kind of like really into being in the moment. And I'm finding that's where, you know, the gift is. The moment is where the present is. And that is a pun, isn't it? You know, the present is where the present is. And whatever's happening, if I believe God is everything or God is nothing, then whatever's happening is what is supposed to be. You know, acceptance is the answer to all our problems today. If we're agitated, you know, it's something I think should be different. Look, I don't want to get sick. I'm scared to pray for patience or anything like that because I figure I'll get presented with shit that's going to have to make me patient. You know, so I'm very careful like what I pray for. I have like little weird superstitious things that still kind of come up for me. I'm a little bit, but the other thing I'm going to close with is to say that if you're more than five years sober or more, and you're only in one program, you're likely in denial. That's how I look at it. I go to a lot of programs to help me with different things. I go to the money program to help me learn about how to handle money and my relationship to it. I've been to Al-Anon to know how to handle you guys and myself and people. And I've gone to the food program to learn about how to eat. I've gone to SLA to learn about sex and love relations. I've gone everywhere because, you know, it's the best deal in town. For a buck in the basket, you can get so much recovery. I've gotten outside help out over the years, but it's never matched what I've gotten in this program. And being of service is another way to really, and sponsoring is really another terrific way to see yourself and to remember from where you came. So I'm looking forward to hopefully doing this AA Zoom birthday international to celebrate my 30 years a little late. And I don't know if it's going to be a roast. My friends in Monaco say that's a mean thought to do to myself, but I kind of thought it would be funny to do like a AA Zoom roast with all my AA friends that I know in person from around the world and ones I've met in Zoom. And so I'm working on planning that. I think Sebastian, who's here from Ibiza, is going to be the host because he's so charming. And again, I want to welcome all the new people. And I want to say this is the best deal in town, the only game in town. This is where the elite meet to eat. This is, it may be the insane asylum run by the inmates, and it may be the largest growing organization that nobody wants to join. However, it's Bill W. was voted the one of the most influential people of the 20th century for creating this. So with that, I hope I said something that someone can relate to. And I'm going to close and look forward to hearing to you, all of you. Thank you for my life. Thank you for my sobriety. Thank you for my opportunity to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, the place that saved my life, gave me a life, allowed me to be lean, clean, sober machine. Thanks.